India approached that of the natives, and that the mutiny was everywhere triumphant. The wholesale massacres and outrages which would in such a case have been inflicted upon the conquered whites could be no worse than those suffered by the Saxons at the hands of the Danes. From this terrible state of subjugation and suffering the Saxons were rescued by the prudence, the patience, the valor, and the wisdom of King Alfred. In all subsequent ages, England has produced no single man who united in himself so many great qualities as did this first of great Englishmen. He was learned, wise, brave, prudent, and pious, devoted to his people, clement to his conquered enemies. He was as great in peace as in war, and yet few English boys know more than a faint outline of the events of Alfred's reign, events which have exercised an influence upon the whole future of the English people. School histories pass briefly over them, and the incident of the burnt cake is that which is, of all the actions of a great and glorious reign, the most prominent in boys' minds. In this story I have tried to supply the deficiency. Fortunately, in the Saxon Chronicles and in the life of King Alfred, written by his friend and counsellor Asser, we have a trustworthy account of the events and battles which first laid Wessex prostrate beneath the foot of the Danes, and finally freed England for many years from the invaders. These histories I have faithfully followed. The account of the siege of Paris is taken from a very full and detailed history of that event by the Abbé d'Abbon, who was a witness of the scenes he described. Yours sincerely, G. A. Henty. End of preface. The Dragon and the Raven by G. A. Henty. Chapter 1. A low hut built of turf, roughly thatched with rushes, and standing on the highest spot of some slightly raised ground. It was surrounded by a tangled growth of bushes and low trees, through which a narrow and winding path gave admission to the narrow space on which the hut stood. The ground sloped rapidly. 20 yards from the house the trees ceased, and a rank vegetation of reeds and rushes took the place of the bushes, and the ground became soft and swampy. A little further, pools of stagnant water appeared among the rushes, and the path abruptly stopped at the edge of a stagnant swamp, though the passage could be followed by the eye for some distance among the tall rushes. The hut, in fact, stood on a hummock in the midst of a wide swamp, where the water sometimes deepened into lakes connected by sluggish streams. On the open spaces of water herons stalked near the margin, and great flocks of wildfowl dotted the surface. Other signs of life there were none, although a sharp eye might have detected light threads of smoke curling up here and there from spots where the ground rose somewhat above the general level. These slight elevations, however, were not visible to the eye, for the herbage there grew shorter than on the lower and wetter ground, and the land apparently stretched away for a vast distance in a dead flat, a rush-covered swamp, broken only here and there by patches of bushes and low trees. The little hut was situated in the very heart of the fen country, now drained and cultivated, but in the year 870, untouched by the hand of man, the haunt of wildfowl and human fugitives. At the door of the hut stood a lad some 14 years old. His only garment was a short, sleeveless tunic girded in at the waist. His arms and legs were bare, his head was uncovered, and his hair fell in masses on his shoulders. In his hand he held a short spear, and leaning against the wall of the hut close at hand was a bow and quiver of arrows. The lad looked at the sun, which was sinking toward the horizon. "Father is late," he said. "I trust that no harm has come to him in Egbert. He said he'd return today without fail. He said 3 or 4 days, and this is the fourth. It's dull work here alone."
"You think so, Wolf, don't you, old fellow? It's worse for you than it is for me, pent up on this hummock of ground with scarce room to stretch your limbs."
A great wolfhound, who was lying with his head between his paws by the embers of a fire in the center of the hut, raised his head on being addressed, and uttered a low howl indicative of his agreement with his master's opinion, and his disgust at his present place of abode.
"Never mind, old fellow," the boy continued, "we shan't be here long, I hope, and then you shall go with me in the woods again and hunt the wolves to your heart's content."
The great hound gave a lazy wag of his tail.